Okay, so let me make sure you understand what the wager is. He gets $1 million take home. Or he can take the gamble, and in 30 days, he has to spend $30 million, and at the end of it, he can't have anything except for the shirt on his back. No assets whatsoever. Now, wouldn't you like to have that chance? Could you imagine? $1 million a day, you could just go spend it and spend it and spend it and spend it. And if you managed to spend it all, he would get $300 million. And you know what? He found out it wasn't as easy as he thought. He took the gamble. But the man in the clip was right. Getting rid of money and accumulating absolutely nothing is more difficult to do than you think. As he threw away what everybody thought was his inheritance, people began to judge him. They called him irresponsible. They questioned his motives. Of course, you know what happened. A few people latched onto him just to take care of the crazy man throwing money away like it was water. Did he succeed in getting rid of all of it? Well, I'll have to let you go get the movie and figure that out for yourself. Because we're not really talking about Mr. Brewster this morning. We're going to talk about I Quit. And we started this series. This is the fourth sermon in this particular series. And we started this series back at the beginning of October. And we started thinking about the idea that if we're going to live in this growing relationship, the first thing I have to do is I have to quit making excuses. I have to get involved in this and not keep telling people why I can't do it. And then after I quit making excuses, I have to quit complaining. Because we realize that a complaint is nothing more than me with an attempt to get things done my way. Last week, we climbed in the ring with our fears, and we took some punches at it. Because we learned if I'm going to live in this growing relationship with God, I have to quit living in fear. You know, I almost feel like Sesame Street. What's our word of the day? By the way, it's not money. Our word of the day, if I'm going to live in a growing relationship with God, I have to quit squandering. Now, when I look at this, just so you understand what we're talking about, this is what I mean when we talk about the word squander. It means to waste something, especially money or time, in a reckless or foolish manner. Keep that definition. It's important. That's why it's in the bulletin. Write it down. It can also mean allow an opportunity to pass or be lost. So squander doesn't necessarily have to be about money. It can be about time and opportunity. Other key words that you need to kind of put in there, it means that word waste, which means use or expend in a carelessly or extravagant. So you got to have that word waste in there. Another key word is the word reckless, which is without thinking or caring about consequences of action. That's important. And the other key word that you see in this definition is the word foolish, lacking good sense or judgment, someone that is unwise. And I look at this, and we put all of those little things together. What are we talking about? This is about the resources of our life that we have been blessed with and using them without giving any consideration to your purpose. Why are you here? What is your life all about? It's about using those resources that you've been blessed with without giving any thought to the eternal consequences. What's it going to mean? It's about using those resources without a plan. We are budgeters in our house, and my family swears I can know how many whiskers are on Abe Lincoln's beard because I'm such a penny pincher when it comes to budgets. But you need to understand this particular sermon, not about money. Matter of fact, I hope you noticed we got added to our little decorations because guess what? There's money everywhere. Just take a look. It's in the windows. It's on top of the piano. It's on the table. There's a little bag up here. There's plenty of money because money is not the issue. You see, I am a firm believer that churches don't have money problems. You know what else? Churches don't have service problems. Therefore, it would be a huge waste of time for me to preach a sermon about money. And this is not about money. Matter of fact, if what you get out of this is that the church wants your money, then you know what? Go back and listen to the tape. Because this is not a money issue. This is something that's much, much, much deeper. It, my friends, is a heart issue. The issues that we're going to talk today speak to the core of Christian faith. And quite frankly, you hear is our word. It must be fixed if we are going to successfully live in our growing relationship with Christ. I'm going to submit to you today, you cannot live a squandering life and at the same time live in a growing relationship with anybody. Think about it. When we got married, you know what they told me our three biggest fights were going to be about? Money, sex, and in-laws. That's it. That sums up all the fights in the marriage. Money being the lead argument that couples have. It's all about the money, but you know what? It's never about the money. It's all about how we're using that money. And when I say that churches never have money issues, I have some people that agree with me. You know who agrees with me? Jesus agrees with me. Absolutely. Matthew chapter 6, verse 21, and I know what you're thinking. Barry, you told me to turn to John. Stay. I'll be there in a minute. This is a sermon with a great big introduction and a little bitty sermon at the end of it. So just hold on tight. We got to go through the introduction. So Matthew chapter 6, 21 says, "For where your treasure is, your heart will be also." I didn't make this up. This is a direct quote out of the mouth of Jesus. And Jesus hits the nail right on the head. You see, Jesus tells us that the issue is not a resource issue. It is a heart issue. As a matter of fact, Jesus says, where you put your resources, that would be your treasure, it is or will eventually become your love, your heart. He ties the two together very intricately to say, you know what? You want to see what somebody loves? Look at their calendar and look at their checkbook. That's the love of their life. Because where your treasure is, your heart will be also. And the inverse is also true. That which you love, your heart, is where you will spend your resources. You will never have a problem spending on that thing that you love. It's just the way it works. I didn't build it that way. I didn't make this up. This is the way the human heart works. The thing that you love is that thing that you will always tend to put your treasure to. So what Jesus really tells us, Jesus identifies this not as a resource issue, but a priority issue. And you're probably thinking, priority, wait a minute, didn't we do a sermon on that? Yes. Yes, we did. Go back to I Choose. We discussed this idea of choosing our purpose over popularity, and that means we have to prioritize. Matthew chapter 6, 24 says, no one, notice it says no one, not somebody, not some, not a few, no one can serve two masters. Either you will hate the one and love the other, or will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve, again, out of the mouth of Jesus, not the mouth of Barry, you cannot serve both God and, he uses the word money there. Now, we'll talk in just a minute about what it means to serve money. But let's be very clear what Jesus is saying. You cannot have two priorities in your life. You can replace the word money with relationship or car or house or hobby. You cannot have two priorities. You can only have one. Now, you can convince yourself, well, I love both of these things equally. No, you can only have one. You only get to pick one thing. There's only one seat on the throne of your heart. It is not a bicycle built for two. It's a unicycle. One thing can sit on it. And by the way, just so you know, Jesus isn't the only one that agrees with me on this topic. Guess who else agrees with me? Yay, the person that wrote most of the doctrine that we use in the church, Paul agrees with this idea. Matter of fact, in 2 Corinthians chapter 9, verse 7 says, each of you should give what you have decided to give in your heart to give. not reluctantly or compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver. And this is an important verse because this is the verse that basically sets aside the Old Testament law of tithing. And yes, I absolutely did say that. You can go check the tape later. This verse sets aside the law of tithing. Now, this does not mean that tithing is not a good biblical principle to start figuring out how to use your resources wisely. But in the Old Testament, if you didn't give 10% of your income, and income was crops, grain, chickens, whatever you were raising, if you didn't give 10%, they labeled it a sin. As a matter of fact, the problem is the Pharisees got so obsessed with not sinning, they missed the whole point. Matthew chapter 23, 23 says, "Woe to you teachers of the law of the Pharisees, you hypocrites! You give a tenth of your spices, mint, dill, and cumin, but you have neglected the more important matters of the law, justice, mercy, faithfulness. You have practiced the latter with neglect. You should have practiced the latter without neglecting the former." And again, Jesus is not pinging them because they gave. He's getting after them because their giving and their heart isn't in what they're doing. You know why? Because it's not a money issue. It's not a time issue. It's not a resource issue. We are talking about a heart issue. You see, I love this passage because it lets me off the hook. I've been here 8 years, and I have never preached a money sermon. And you know what? I'm still not preaching one. Because you know why? This isn't about the money. We can swap the word money with anything else in your life, and you can just fill in the blank however you want. See, Paul says put away the guilt messages. He does. Don't make them feel guilty. He even goes on, he says, don't make people give under compulsion. He tells me, put it away. Don't make them feel like, oh my gosh, if I don't give, I'm a bad person. No, don't put them under compulsion. Don't put them under the gun. Don't preach to the symptom. Preach to the heart of the issue. And then send them home and let them decide for themselves. See, that's the essence of that verse that Paul puts out there. He's saying, you know what? I don't ever want you to give anything that belongs to you, but I want you to give everything that belongs to God. And in your heart, you have to decide, what is that? I can't decide for you. You know who I can decide for? Me. And only me. See, you can actually squander giving money and time to God if you don't give it with the right attitude. If you're putting your money in the offering plate and you're doing it just because you're feeling guilty or you're compulsed to do it, or you know what, you're afraid somebody's going to think you're a bad person, then guess what? You're still squandering because your heart's not in what you're doing. You know, as leaders, we have to be careful because we can actually squander resources. Remember, there were two definitions of that word squander. We can squander resources if we hoard them and we miss the opportunities to reach those that are lost. So you can actually squander money by saving money because you allow opportunities that God puts right in front of you to pass by. But you know what? We begin to trust in the checkbook balance rather than God will provide. I'm here to do a mission. I'm here for a job. See, so this isn't about giving money. Because look around in the windows. Look at the table. Look at the piano. Look at here. There's plenty of money. Money is never an issue as long as your heart's in the right place. Once you put your heart in the right place, everything fixes itself. You don't have to preach on this idea of money. Now, I would like to introduce you to what I am going to call a little bit of bad doctrine. And this is important. We find this in Luke chapter 6, verse 38. And it says, "Given it will be given to you, a good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over, will be poured out into your lap. For with the measure you use, it will be measured to you." And I just want to let you know something. Ministers across America love this phrase. "Given it will be given unto you. Given so you can get." That's what we teach them. We even made up little slogans. You can't outgive God. And we preached it to Christians across the centuries. And you know what? The problem is we've just preached it wrong. Because if you take this verse and you put it back where it belongs, and you put it back in the context, we're not talking about money with this verse. This verse is talking about forgiveness.
It says when you forgive, you get forgiven as much as you. It's not talking about money. It never says you get more money. It says when you forgive, you get more forgiveness. You get the ability to forgive more, so you feel more forgiven. It's not talking about money. The problem is when we drag this verse out of context and we quote it to Christians and we convince them that you get to give, then they start giving, but they don't get because they think they're supposed to put it in the offering plate, and like in 90 days it turns around and you get to pay back. When you take that mentality and then they don't give, you know, and they don't get, then you know what happens? They stop giving. And then they look at the Bible and say, "You lied to me. I gave and I didn't get anything out of it." And you understand, this is bad doctrine. Because the Bible never says that you give in order to get. It never does. As a matter of fact, Peter broached this subject when he looked at Jesus. He said, "Jesus, I gave my life for this. I gave up my business, my family, my car. I gave up everything. What's in it for me?" And you know, Jesus says, you'll get when the kingdom of heaven comes. That's when you'll get. If you're giving to get here on earth, if you're tithing or you're giving money to the church because you want to make sure that God gives you some in return, stop. Don't put another dime in the offering plate. Yeah, I actually said it. If that's why you're giving to get, stop. Go evaluate your heart. Get your heart right, and then you can come back and we can talk about what it means to give. You see, so I didn't mean to scare you there. I don't need you to yell. So this is a priority issue, and I do want to talk real quick about the dangers of poor priorities. Can't talk about this topic without going through this story. This is an important story, and again, this is one of Jesus' story. I made really sure, with the exception of the excerpt, we stayed in Jesus' backcourt, because what he says on this matter is most important. So in Luke chapter 12, verse 13 through 21, Jesus tells, and I'm not reading it, aren't you happy? I'm not going to attempt to read 10 verses right there. But Jesus tells a story about a man who served money. And this is what Jesus tells us, that the man had a successful crop, and it says he stuffed his barns full, and he still had more. So he had everything he needed. His barns were all full. His savings account was drawing good interest. And so this is the point we give to God, right? No. Thus he decided to tear down the existing barns and build bigger ones so that he could save more. And I want you to catch this because in my mind, and I can tell you, I had this more when I was in my late teens and early 20s. I kept telling God that, "God, after I have enough, I'll give to you." I tell him that all the time. And you know what I finally figured out? I never have enough. I never did. If I use that mentality about how I'm going to use my resources, I never have enough time and I never have enough money. I can always find something else I need to do. I can always build bigger barns. So don't think for a second that more equals more generosity. As a matter of fact, what you're going to find is the more you have, the less generous you get. You have to work harder at it when God has blessed your life. So what was the man's priorities? Well, that's really simple. And this is going to look a lot like this thing we call the American dream. First, it was work as hard as you can and make as much as you can. Man, work night and day and labor hard and take the overtime, and you know what? Don't worry about the family. Don't worry about the church. Don't worry about the things I'm supposed to be doing. You know what? It's the old saying, I'm going to make hay while the sun is shining. And I'm going to put all of my resources into this, and I'm going to work, 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 work so that I can make as much as I possibly can. And then it was save as much as you can so that you don't have to work anymore. Isn't this the whole concept of retirement? Now, again, there's nothing wrong with hard work, and there's nothing wrong with getting paid, okay? I have a job with Plexus, and be honest with you, if they don't pay me, I'm not coming back to work, okay? There's nothing wrong with having a job and getting paid. As a matter of fact, the Bible says, don't work, don't eat. You know, it encourages a good work habit. You know what else? There's also nothing wrong with saving. We have savings accounts. We have college coming up, and we've been saving for that, and we've got retirement accounts. But again, that can't be the focal point of my checkbook. See, that's the problem, is this man, all he was doing was stuffing it away. And you know what? Then it was, after I've got the barns all full, then take it easy because you've accomplished your goal. As a matter of fact, what did the man say? I'll say to myself,
You have plenty of grain laid up for many years. Take life easy. Eat, drink, and be merry. And boom. You see it? You see the man's heart? He revealed it. By the way, I didn't yell boom. I didn't want to scare him a second time. But you see it? His priorities were all about himself. His priorities were all about the here and now. See, that's as far as he has gotten. His priorities were all messed up because God had no priority. And here's the interesting thing. The bill came due. Verses 20 through 21. But God said to him, "You fool." Tie back to that word squandering. Now you know why I had you write that word down. "This very night your life will be demanded of you. Then who will get what you have prepared for yourself?" This is how it will be with whoever stores up things for themselves, but is not rich toward God. Now this is an important statement because notice what he says. He doesn't say it's wrong to store up things. What does he say? He says it's wrong to store up with giving no consideration to God. Again, bad doctrine is usually preached right out of this verse because somebody says, "Well, you shouldn't save up, you should give it all." He says, woe to those that save up but give no priority to God. See, this man had given no priority to God in his life. He had stuffed it all in a barn. And you know what? He wasn't going to get to spend a dime of it because his life was going to get cut short. And I love the question as Jesus said, then who's going to take it? You spent no time on relationships. You spent no time on God. Who's going to take it? You don't have anything. All you've got is a barn full of stuff. And you know what he did? Our word for the day. He squandered his life stuffing a barn. I have to sigh a little bit because you know what? I've done the same thing. We like stuff. As a matter of fact, we stuff our houses so full, and then our houses get all full, so we rent out, we go out and we spend money to rent space, to have more space to stuff stuff in. Don't we do this? And Jesus says, you know what? It's squandering. It's squandering. Because you're using your resources to just fill space in your life and nothing for God. So now, if you've turned your way, now, by the way, that was the intro to the sermon, okay? Now we're going to preach the sermon, okay? I just had to get you on the same page to help you understand this is not about money. This is not about serving in the church. This is about where is your heart? Because if your heart's in the right place, checkbook and the calendar and the times to watch and all the other things will be attached to your heart because Jesus says where your heart is, there your treasure will be also. So I don't want to solve the symptom. I want to solve the problem. And hopefully you've made it to John chapter 6, verses 5 through 13. And I am going to attempt to read this story. And by the way, just so you know, this is a reading comprehension game we're going to play. We're going to read the story. And then I'm going to ask you questions. And by the way, it's open book. So you may have the story open to answer the questions, okay? So you don't have to remember, but so don't get too stressed out. I remember all this open book, but I want to read the story to you first. When Jesus looked up and saw the great crowd coming toward them, he said to Philip, "Where shall we buy bread for these people to eat?" He asked this only to test him, for he already had in mind what he was going to do. Philip answered him, "It would take more than a half a year's wages to buy enough bread for each one to have a bite." Another of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, spoke up. "Here is a little boy with five small barley loaves and two small fish. But how far will they go among so many?" Jesus said, "Have the people sit down." There was plenty of grass. Not enough money, but plenty of grass in that place. And they sat down. About 5,000 men were there. Jesus then took the loaves and gave thanks and distributed to those who were seated as much as they wanted. he did the same with the fish. When they had all had enough to eat, he said to the disciples, gather the pieces that are left over and let nothing be wasted. Hey, there's one of our key words for the day. So they gathered them up and filled 12 baskets with the pieces of five barley loaves, and with the pieces of five barley loaves left over by those who had eaten. And there were 12 baskets that were left. 12 baskets. Okay, you got the story? Got it in your head really good? It's open book. You can look back. So let's see how well we comprehend this story. Question number one. Where did the food come from? Write it down. I gave you a spot to write an answer. This, you don't have to share your answer. I'm going to give you the answer, but write down, where did the food come from? Look at the story. Where did the food come from? You ready? Here's your answer. Survey says? God. How many people wrote small boy, little boy? It came from God. See, this is mistake number one. This is the first mistake we make, is the fact that we don't actually view God as the provider. We stop with, who was the last person to touch it before me? I mean, for my paycheck, that would be my company. Are they my provider? No, they're not. It's God. You know what I find interesting about this particular lesson is Jesus had intended what he was going to do before he even started. It's almost like he was looking at us, okay, you guys tell me, how are you going to feed these people? And they said, well, we don't have any food. We don't have any money. We don't have anything. As a matter of fact, to give one bite, we'd have to go out and work for a year. And you know what? Jesus said, watch, nothing up my sleeves. Let's begin with God. Remember what kind of loaves they were? They were barley loaves. Well, where did the barley come from? Well, the barley came from the garden. Well, where did the garden come from? Well, the garden came from the seed. Where did the seed come from? Well, go back far enough and guess where the seed comes from? God. As well as the rain and the sunshine and all those other things that were used to grow that barley, to make those loaves, it all came from God. Where did the fish come from? Well, they came from God. Go back and read the story of creation. God said, let there be fish. There were fish. No God, no fish. See how this works? But if you're going to get your heart in the right place, the first thing that you have to see is that the provider of everything that you've got is God. That sounds like duh, but we miss this a lot. Question number two. How many fish and loaves did Jesus need to perform the miracle? It's open book. You can read it. It's right there in front of you. You got it? Ready? Write it down. Got it? You know what the answer is? Survey says none. Didn't need anything. Matter of fact, if you go over there and you look at those verses where Jesus was tempted in the wilderness, Satan came to him and said, take these stones and make them bread. And Jesus didn't say, can't do that. He just says, man does not live by bread alone. So Jesus didn't need these loaves, these little loaves. He could have went out on the way and just picked up some rocks off the ground and put them in the basket. He could have done the cloudy with a chance of meatballs thing. We could have just rained fish down on top of the people. That would have been a little nasty, but it might have gotten the point across really well. But you need to understand, God didn't need anything. Jesus didn't need their resources. Now, here's where we like to take the off-ramp. Well, if God doesn't need it, I'll just keep it, because I do. We'll get to that attitude in a moment. Don't take the off-ramp. Stay with me down the journey, because the next question, how much did Jesus use? How much did he use? It's in the story. It's open book. You can go back and look. How much did Jesus use to do this miracle? Ready for your answer? Survey says, everything they got offered. You know what? There were 5,000 people in that crowd, and they said there were women and children. And I know for a fact that there is no mom in the universe that didn't leave with something in her pocket to feed her kids. It just doesn't happen. These people didn't have McDonald's. There were no drive-thrus. There was nowhere to go. I am sorry. There was more food in that crowd. But you know what happened, don't you? The apostles came looking for the food, and they were walking around like, you got any food? And they're looking at them, you know what I've got is only enough for me. So, no, I ain't got nothing. Nothing. Nothing on me. Look, my pockets are empty. I've got nothing. You know, I've been putting the blanket over the picnic basket so they don't see that. You know what? It never says the apostles didn't have any food. Just as they didn't have enough food. Come on, these are traveling men. Men like to eat. You think they went somewhere without food? Come on. But you know what? They were hungry too. And if I give God mine, then what am I going to eat? I mean, come on, be reasonable. My little bit can't feed 5,000 people, so why bother? I'll just hang on to it. And please don't get lost. Who is the only one that was willing to give their food? A child. A child with faith looked at it and said, you know what? You can have mine. I have no idea what I'm going to eat, but here's mine. I'll make mine available. I don't know what you can do with such a little bit, but you know what? Here. And you know what? He didn't give him a portion. I mean, wouldn't it have been fair if he had those barley loaves and those fish? He said, you know what? I'll keep a loaf for myself and a fish for myself, and you can have the rest. He gave him the whole meal. Everything that was offered. And you know what? Jesus didn't need all of it. But he used everything that was offered to him. Because you know why? Jesus doesn't squander. He makes sure that he puts everything to use. Okay, of all the people there that day, who really had a story of a lifetime to tell? You're scared to write anything down now, aren't you? It's right there in the book. Because there's only one person that had a story to tell. The little boy. I mean, everybody else experienced the miracle. I hate to tell you this. That boy probably lived, and when he was like 90 years old, he probably told that story a bazillion times of how Jesus used his loaves and fish to feed 5,000 people. As a matter of fact, over the years, it probably went from 5,000 to 10,000. I don't know. But you know what? That story got told over and over and over and over and over and over and over by that little boy. Because you know why? He didn't witness a miracle. He participated in a miracle. Jesus used his resources to feed 5,000 people. He could tell a personal story of how Jesus had changed his life. Remember when we were talking about our fears last week when we were talking about the toaster and you got to plug it in and you got to have it powered up? You've got to have a story to tell. And if you know what? You've never invested in this idea. You've got nothing to tell people. You know why? Because God's probably never done nothing in your life that you're worth telling anybody about. You've squandered the opportunity to have Jesus use your resources to bless somebody else's life. So you've got nothing to share. You understanding why this squandering thing is a problem? You understanding why it's such an issue? Because it's not a money issue. Look around. There's plenty of money. It's in the windows. By the way, I'll save you all the effort. It's all fake. Okay, I did not put any real money out there, so you don't have to dig to see if there's that. The money in the windows, on the it's all fake. You don't have to destroy the windows and say, maybe you slip a $1 bill here. It's all fake. But you understand, there's plenty of it. There's plenty of money. Money is never an issue. Okay, last question. Here we go. How many baskets were left over? You're scared. Very good. 12. Oh, got one right? Now, why is that number important? Because who was the lesson for? The disciples. How many disciples were there? 12. So at the beginning of the story, they had not enough food to feed, and they didn't even know what they were going to eat for themselves, and when they're done, they all have their own little happy meal. Isn't that totally cool? So Jesus fed the 5,000, and he turned to the disciples and said, now, you want yours? Where's your food? Because remember, they hadn't eaten yet. There were 5,000 people to serve. That means you had to take 5,000, plus the men and women, and plus the women and children. So there were lots of people there. And you know who served all those people? The disciples. You think they probably didn't wonder as they were handing out that food? Don't take too much, because there's got to be something left on this basket. There's got to be something for me. So you take. And they said, well, I'm still hungry. And they're like, but okay, you take. Okay, you take. And they just kept watching the food go and go and go. And I don't know how this miracle worked. I don't know if they took the fish out and another one. I don't know what happened. But I wonder if the disciples kept looking at those baskets and their stomachs were growling. They're like, is there going to be anything left for me? I'm at the end of the line. Or is the chicken going to all be gone? Is the macaroni cheese bowl going to be all empty? Is it going to be anything left for me? And then Jesus looked at them and said, okay, all the baskets are empty. Now here's what I want you to do. I want you to take the baskets and go back out amongst the people and collect the leftovers. Can't you just see that the apostles are going to say, excuse me, here's a crumb. oh, here's a little like fish scale. They were expecting to pick up little bits, and they were picking up chunks. Man, they were picking up half a loaves of bread that didn't get eaten, and fishes that didn't even get touched. And they were all sitting there, and they accumulated all this. And they looked it up, they go, hey, look, that's a basket for each of us. And Jesus is like, well, duh. Do you think I'm going to leave you out of this? Don't get to give, but you do understand that God won't forget that, you know what? He made promises to you. And a lot of times we miss this in this story. We covered this story a few weeks ago, but I left this part of the story out because I knew I had to come back over and talk about this. And you understand, this is what it means not to squander. You offer everything that you've got to God. He will use everything that you offer him, but there will always be enough left over for you. But not maybe not in excess. It doesn't mean God's going to make you rich. But you know what? He'll be there. And when I tell myself I can't, throw in excuse. By the way, go back to week one and you find out we're supposed to quit making excuses. Now you see why we're going in the order we went. Or I go and I complain to God because I don't have enough. See number two. Or I'm afraid that if I give you the money that, you know what? See number three. You see why we're going in the order we're going? They logically build on top of each other. You see, Jesus has a goal in this giving thing, and it has absolutely, positively nothing with increasing your checking account. It's about sharing in the miracle. This is what it says in Luke chapter 5, verse 7. I tell you that in the same way, there will be more rejoicing in heaven over one sinner who repents than over 99 righteous people who do not need to repent. You want to know why God gives us the resources? Put them to use in building a kingdom. That's it. To allow us to share in the miracle. So let me ask you a question. How much is one soul worth? What if that one soul was your kid? How much is that one worth? What if that one soul was your mom, your spouse, your neighbor? Your uncle. If we were only in this entire church's history going to lead one person to Christ, how much is that worth to you? When you put a dollar figure on it, you figured out your heart. When you can't put a dollar figure on it, you have figured out God's heart. There is nothing that is more precious than a person of any shape, size, color, race. Doesn't matter. They're all precious to him. And they are priceless. There is nothing that's too big. And when God gives us the opportunity to take out of my, I'm not giving back to God. You know what? I am allowing God to use what he has given me. See, if I give back to God, you know what that means? That means I kept a portion for myself. I'm allowing God to use whatever he asks for. I'm trusting him that he's going to make sure he doesn't ask for so much that there's nothing left that I won't be. But he can have anything he wants. Anything. Just ask. It's his. Man, that's a hard thing to live by. By the way, I don't do this perfectly either. There are times God says, do that. I'm like, God, did you not see the cost of college here lately? Are you kidding me? You want me to do what? Well, God, I gave last month. Well, God, I'm already really, really, really busy, Lord. You said anything. You said everything. Did you really mean anything and everything? You see, the question we have to begin to ask ourselves, are our priorities investing? By the way, when I say investing, I don't mean that we're investing $5 today to get $10 tomorrow. Are we investing in people, the thing that God finds precious? Or, there's an or. Are we squandering our opportunities and allowing the people that God put into our lives to pass us by? And then we're going to get to the end, and God's going to look at you and say, you fool. You stuffed the barn, and what are you going to do with it now? He makes the idea that treasure in heaven. You realize there's only one eternal thing here on the planet, right? And it's not your bank account. It's not your clock. It's not your calendar. It's not your hobby, whatever it is. There's only one eternal thing on this planet, people. It's the only thing you can send forward into heaven, people. And you know what? I want to ask you something.
what's your account look like? And that's a hard question to answer. When it comes to your account in heaven, how's the balance sheet? Are you going to have people there that when you get there, they're going to walk up to you in that old song, the old Ray Moult song, thank you, they're going to walk up to you and say, man, I sure am glad you gave that dime. I sure am glad you stopped 5 minutes and helped me change my tire. I sure am glad that you walked across the street and gave me money for a bus ticket this morning. I sure am glad that you cared just this little bitty bit. Because God took that little bitty bit and turned it into a basketful. If we're going to grow in a relationship with Christ, we got to quit squandering our opportunities. We got to take all the money and all the time that's laying around, and we got to put them to use. And stop stuffing them in places, hoping that God won't find them like he's some glorified tax accountant. Put it here, God won't find it in this account. He knows. The only question you have to ask yourself, what are you going to do? Because I promise you this, God's not going to come take it. He's not going to force you to give it. Because you know what? Then he's making you do it under compulsion. And I can't guilt you into giving. I'll go back to my statement. I don't ever want you to put anything in this offering plate that belongs to you. If it belongs to you, keep it. It's yours. But I do want you to be willing to put everything into this plate that belongs to God. Same with your time. Never want you to serve in anything in this church that you're doing for you. But I do want you to do everything that God has called you to do. That's the idea of squandering. That's the issue. It's not about the money. It's about the resources.